So, David, tell me what it was like to go through all of that pubescent, young adult, high school drama as a person who is, but didn't yet realize that he was asexual.
Well, it was really confusing and really scary. I remember all of my peers all around me and all of my adults all around me expected sexuality to be this thing that I was going to be going through, this thing that was going to be completely reshaping who I was and how I connected with other people and every element of my life.
They expected you to have crushes on girls and stuff like that.
Yeah. Expected me to have crushes on girls, expected me to be really, really nervous about how I was going to, you know, get to explore my sexuality in really early ways. And I just didn't understand what that meant. I didn't have an internal reference frame to understand why everyone was getting so caught up in sexuality. It was like everyone suddenly expected me to be communicating with them in some alien language.
If you hung out with other guys, would they say things about girls and you would think, I don't get that?
Oh, yeah. I remember hanging out with my friends and everyone would have conversations about who in our class we thought was cute, what movie stars we thought were cute. And I didn't have a way to answer that question. And I kind of also had this awareness that answering that question, figuring that out, was supposed to be a really important part of who I was supposed to be a really important part of how I connected with other people. And that made it scary. That made it really scary.
Were you afraid something was wrong with you?
Yeah. I was really afraid that, I think like a lot of asexual people, that I was broken. And I know that later on, when there was an asexual community, people coming to the community would continually express this fear that they were broken, that there was something wrong with them.
So how did you come across the notion of asexuality as an identity?
I remember being about 13 or 14 and having assumed that sexuality was just a thing that was going to happen to me. And when it didn't, I realized that it was something that I should start thinking about. I should start thinking about the fact that I wasn't feeling this thing that everyone else was feeling. And so I kind of plucked the word asexual out of thin air and started using it to describe myself. And it wasn't until maybe 5, 6 years of really struggling with whether that was okay that I came to the realization that it's like a sexual orientation, that it's not a choice, that it's not a problem. It's just a way that I am.
Do you think it's biologically hardwired? You're just born that way?
I think so. It's possible. Most asexual people have been asexual for our entire lives and probably will be asexual for our entire lives. But I also think that the biology is really complicated. We don't know what makes people straight or what makes people gay, and we don't know what makes people asexual.
Hmm. So once you realized that you weren't alone, you started a support network for asexual people. And how many members are there now?
When I was 18, I started an organization called the Asexual Visibility and Education Network, called asexuality.org. And that organization has grown to have about 70,000 members across the globe.
70,000. So obviously this is not that uncommon an identity. What does it mean to you and to others to be asexual?
An asexual person is someone who doesn't experience sexual attraction. So most people, whether they see someone walking down the street or they're in a deep relationship with someone, feel a desire to make sex a part of how they connect with others. Asexual people don't have that desire. But other than that, we have the same need for connection that everyone else has.
What are some of the common misperceptions?
So they just did a study where they talked about perceptions of asexual people. And the study found that the most common misperceptions, the words associated, wrongly associated with asexuality the most, were inhuman and mechanistic. I think that there's an idea that we're not experiencing something that's a fundamental part of the human experience, and that means that we're broken in some way. And it's really, really important to understand that that's not true. We have the same desire to connect. We laugh with people just as much. We get hurt just as much. And we have all of the richness and complexity and difficulty of human relationships without this one tiny little activity that many people consider really important, but we don't.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around what it would feel like to walk through the world and not feel sexual desire or sexual attraction to people, you must still find people beautiful, aesthetically pleasing. Like, you know, if you look at a beautiful young girl or a beautiful young man, do you think he's lovely or she's very pretty? Or do you just not care what they look like?
I definitely still experience aesthetic beauty. I can still look at someone and know that they're beautiful. I can still look at someone and be very attracted to them. And because I'm attracted to them, I want to get in a conversation with them. I want to spend time with them. And I want to connect with them. I don't necessarily want to engage in sexual activity with them. That's really the difference. And that attraction is so strong that there are people who, in the asexual community, who identify as homoromantic or biromantic or heteroromantic because they're still attracted, romantically attracted to people. It's just not about sexuality.
So this is about decoupling sexual desire from the desire for intimacy or the desire for connection.
Exactly. Because we're a community that desires connection without sex, we've really had this challenge walking around in a sexual world where most people assume that deep intimacy and sexuality go together in some way. And we've had to unvelcro those two concepts. And that's been really hard. We've had to reinvent a lot of the language for how we talk about intimacy. We've had to really dive into some confusing experiences of intimacy in order to understand how to take those two concepts apart.
Really? For example, how do you reinvent the language associated with intimacy?
So one example is that in the asexual community, the word single doesn't really exist because for someone to be single implies that if they're not in a romantic sexual relationship, they don't really have connection in their lives. And for us, every intimate relationship you form counts. If it's romantic, if it's not romantic, if it involves physical touch, if it doesn't involve physical touch, every single person who I connect with is a part of my community and a part of how I have intimacy in my life. And each one of those relationships is worthy of respect. Now, there might be some relationships in the middle of my personal community that are more intimate, that are more important to me, but I'm never, ever at a point where I don't have a relationship with someone who's close to me, who's intimate with me. And I think that's an important key difference.
Would you say your whole life is made up of various forms of friendship, or do you also still have romantic relationships?
So like many asexual people, I have really close friendships and really close romantic relationships. I have a romantic partner who lives in Brooklyn. We met about a year and a half ago. And I remember going on this five-hour discussion where just we both felt an energy towards one another that we never felt for anyone before in our lives. She's also asexual. And I remember walking away from that experience feeling like there was a new, different, powerful kind of intimacy that I never felt before that I wanted to explore. But not feeling like it was more powerful. I still feel like I can get just as close with very, very close friends as I can with very, very close romantic partners. The difference is, to me, romance is almost about a spike of adrenaline that I feel at the beginning of a relationship. There's this sense of longing and fear and a desire to just spend lots and lots of time and lots of my emotional energy with one person, sometimes a person who I've just met. And that's different than how I get close with my friends. I get close with my friends because we find ways to be together that are richly, richly empowering. And then we just build on that and build on that and build on that brick by brick until we've built something huge and fantastic. And both of those kinds of relationships can get me to a place where I feel really deeply fulfilled. They're both deeply intimate. I think they're kind of different paths to the same feeling of connection.
Can you be asexual and still want physical intimacy? Like with your romantic partner or somebody you fall in love with, do you still want to hug, curl up together, touch?
Oh, yeah. Like most asexual people, I still have a desire for physical touch. And I really, really like it. It's a great way to explore my connection with another person, a great source of intimacy. And it doesn't have to end in this one kind of narrow category of physical activity that's sexuality, right? There's a lot of different places physical touch can go. And part of what's fun for me about being asexual is getting to explore all of that.
You know, I'm thinking that as I listen to you talk, I'm sort of thinking that it sounds like for you an asexual relationship is not so much about what's not there, sex, as it is about what other possibilities open up when you take sex off the menu.
Oh, yeah. I mean, to me, a relationship is a way of spending time with another person. If I can explore how to spend time with another person in a way that's meaningful in both of our lives, then we're good. We've got a relationship. We're building some connection that's going to matter to both of us. And if sex isn't one of the things that's interesting to both of us, then it doesn't matter. It's about the things that are interesting, about the things that we're exploring together.
So tell me more about your relationship, your romantic relationship with the woman you met through the network. How did you guys meet?
We met because a documentary came out about asexuality, and she came to the documentary. And I remember during the reception afterward, we sort of went back and forth and jumped into and out of conversations with one another, and then went on this walk and talked until about 3 a.m. And she lives in Brooklyn, and I live in San Francisco. And I spent the entire flight from Brooklyn to San Francisco just writing about this connection with this person and what it meant and how different it was than anything I'd ever felt before. And then we got on a phone call and confessed to one another that we both had really, really strong feelings much, much more quickly than any of us had ever felt before, and decided that we wanted to explore a relationship and decided to start flying back and forth from New York to San Francisco in order to see where it would go.
Hmm. What's she like?
She is just richly, richly intelligent and passionate about changing the world. She is a deeply, deeply kind person who cares really richly about her community and invests really deeply in her community. And one of the ways that she and I feel most emotionally intimate together is when we're sitting down and talking about our communities, talking about all of the other relationships that exist in our lives and how we want to invest in those and how we want to build those together.
Here you are, two people who have fallen in love, from the sound of it, and who are in a romantic relationship and who are both defining themselves as asexual. So what issues come up as you structure the relationship? What kinds of discussions do you have to have about what it means to be in a relationship with each other?
I think a lot of the discussions that we have about building our relationship are the same ones that you would have in a sexual relationship, but there's some that are different. For example, concepts like monogamy are very complicated to apply. If neither of us are being sexual, then what are the rules for what we can and can't do with other people? And she and I have decided that we don't want to limit our ability to form close emotional connections with others. Both of us have many deep emotional connections with other people, and we think that helps our relationship rather than hurting it. So we've made a set of commitments to one another. There's a way that we know we want to be there for one another. And in our relationship, so long as we can make those commitments, we are open to form other close emotional connections that help to enrich that.
What kinds of commitments?
Even small things, like we have a commitment to talk to one another once a week. Usually we'll talk for several hours. We message one another in little ways throughout the day. We fly across the country and see one another about once a month. We play a central role in one another's lives as a place to process and reflect and set intentions for where we want our lives to go. And I think that so long as those things stay true and so long as we continue to explore together, I'm very comfortable with her forming other emotionally close relationships. And I think she's comfortable with me forming other close emotional relationships.
Do you consider yourselves a couple?
Yes, we consider ourselves a couple. We call one another partners. We decided that in part because of our sexual experience, we didn't like gendered words to describe our relationship. We didn't like boyfriend and girlfriend because it felt like that had a script to it that didn't really fit with us. And one of the interesting things about being in an asexual romantic relationship is there's all these scripts for what romantic relationships are supposed to be. We've already kind of taken a really big red marker and crossed out a giant part of that script. And so while we were doing that, we might as well look at the rest of the script, look through it and decide which parts fit with us and which parts don't.
What's in the script?
I think in the script is a certain time when you say that you love another person and a certain meaning that that has. In the script is a certain set of roles, in this case because it's a relationship between a man and a woman, a certain set of roles that the man plays and a certain set of roles that the woman plays. I think that in that script there is an expectation about where that relationship will head in the long term and what it will look like for it to head there. And if a family gets created, what kind of family will get created? And for us, we want to explore a lot of those things on our own terms. We're used to writing our own scripts when it comes to intimacy. And for one another, in our relationship with one another, we want to continue that and don't want to assume that our relationship is going to wind up looking like other romantic relationships.
Yeah, it's really interesting because you seem to have this very unique perspective on the notions we have about romance and sex and intimacy and the way those, it sounds like what you're saying is our culture has tangled those three things up together for centuries probably, and that tangle has really shaped our social lives.
Exactly. And I think one of the things that I've faced throughout my life is I've looked at this tangle of intimacy and sexuality and romance, and there have been things in that tangle that I wanted really, really deeply, and there have been things in that tangle that I didn't want. And when I try to tease it out, when I try to take the intimacy that I want and the bits of romance that I want out of that knotted up ball, there's this really, really deep fear that I'm going to lose something really, really important. That if I try to take these components apart, I'm going to wind up destroying the very mysterious magic thing that I'm going after. And I think that one of the real central struggles for me, and one of the real ways that things I've been able to find in my life as an asexual person, is that fear is unwarranted. That so long as I can find ways of spending time with other people that bring fulfillment to both of us, that magic always stays there. And I can take intimacy and separate it from romance, separate it from sexuality, or vice versa.
Are you saying in our culture, sex has a mystique around it that is undeserved?
Exactly. I think that people have come to see sex as a symbol of connection, a symbol of a relationship moving to a newer, deeper level. When I think that what moves relationships to a deeper level is people figuring out how to be together, people figuring out how to spend time together in ways that works with them. And if sexuality is a part of that, then that's fantastic. But sex in and of itself isn't as powerful as a symbol as our society often purports it to be.
This must be a difficult time to be asexual in our culture right now, because we live in such a, I mean, some people call it a hypersexualized culture, you know, where sexual identity is everywhere. We use sex to sell everything from cars to lipstick to, I don't know, potato chips. I mean, kids, there's hookup culture in high school and colleges. It must be tough to be asexual right now.
I remember when I was younger, it being really intimidating and really scary to be in a culture where sex was used to sell everything. Sex was everywhere. Everyone expected me to be sexual all the time. And as I grew older and as I came to understand it more deeply, I realized that talking about sexuality isn't a problem. We estimate that about scientists estimate that about 1% of the human population is asexual, which means that 99% of the human population is sexual. And talking openly and honestly about sexuality is a really important thing to do. I think the problem isn't that we talk about sex. The problem is that we don't talk openly and honestly about sexuality enough. It's glamorized, and I think the message that people are told is that sex is something that will never be boring. Sex is something that will always be intense and magical and energetic and powerful, and that the extent to the and that the sexuality that people are experiencing is a gauge for how much they really love one another. And that, I think, is destructive.
Of course, I wonder, you know, behind the closed doors of many marriages, don't you wonder how important sex really is in many people's relationships? I mean, what I've learned from years of, you know, having friends who are married and who have had children is that you never know what's going on in relationships. So many relationships don't fit the social norms we all supposedly subscribe to.
Oh, exactly. I think that in any healthy married relationship, that most of the connection that those two people share is going to be about things other than sexuality. There's just too much time that they're spending together, hopefully positive time, that's not about that. And so if sexuality goes away, I don't think it's a big deal. But I think that we live in a culture, and maybe it is a big deal. Maybe it is a big deal to those people, but I don't think it needs to be a big deal. I don't think that means that there's anything intrinsically wrong with the relationship. But I think we live in a culture that tells people that if there's a relationship without sexuality, then something has gone deeply wrong.
So if you could give your sexual friends some advice to help them navigate their various kinds of relationships with maybe a little more joy, a little deeper connection, what advice would you give them?
Let me think about this one for a second. Sexuality is a really great way to experience connection with other people, but it's not the only way. And the more we can see connection in every deep conversation we have, in every deep friendship that we have, as well as in the times when we're sexual with people, the more we'll feel that we live lives that are filled richly with connection and with opportunities for connection. And the more we can live those lives, the less we'll feel alone. And I think I want to work towards a world where fewer and fewer people feel like they're alone.
We've been talking a lot in the office lately about the nature of romantic love. And I'm wondering whether maybe there's a kind of quiet revolution sweeping our ideas about relationships. And maybe it's happening in part because we've been putting too much pressure on one kind of relationship, a sexual relationship, to meet all of our needs for intimacy. Do you think things are changing?
Yes, I do. I think that when I look, when I talk to young people, young asexual people and young sexual people all the time, there's this sense that the labels and the scripts of dating and of romance just aren't as relevant anymore. People are connecting with one another openly and in many, many different ways, emotionally. I think more freely than they have in the past, connecting with one another emotionally, not necessarily sexually, more freely than they have in the past. And I think that's a really, really powerful thing. And when I talk to young people about the decision the decision of whether or not to label their relationship as romantic is almost seen as this unnecessarily burdensome sticker sometimes that they put on it. And what young people are experiencing is just connection, and it's somewhere between romance and not romance. And that's fine, and that's great. And I think that we are moving towards a culture where we've got a better way to explain that gray area. And once we can do that, once we can describe connection for its own sake, then I think some of the old scripts of romance will fall away. It'll still be a really deep, powerful way that we connect with one another, but it won't be the only way that counts.
I'm curious, when you talk to young people, what do you say to them? I mean, do you say, you must have a set of questions you ask you know, for people who maybe are curious, maybe they've shown up, they're wondering, could I be asexual or what is this asexual thing? Do you have kind of a set of questions you ask to get them started thinking about the subject?
So I have a lot of young people who, people of all ages, but predominantly young people, who will email me, who will come to my website because they're curious about whether or not they're asexual. And we're very stringent in what we tell them. And what we tell them is, the word asexual is a tool and not a label. If the word makes sense as a tool to figure yourself out, then you should pick it up and you should use it. And if it ever stops making sense, you should put it down and stop using it. And no one can tell you whether or not you are asexual. If you use that word, everyone here will respect you. And you deserve respect from everyone else. And if you, even if the way that you use that word is a little bit different than the way that other people have used that word. And so your job as someone trying to figure out whether or not you're asexual is to look at the stories going on in the community and figure out what resonates with you and then figure out how you can use that to understand yourself more deeply. Because our goal at the end of the day is to help people explore themselves as openly and effectively as possible. And one of the things that I'm really excited about that's happening right now that is part of a moment of really cool transition right now is that discussion about connection happening inside of the asexual community is beginning to come out. And we're beginning to have a larger cultural discussion about how concept of sexuality and concept of human connection can be separated. And I think that if we can do that, if we can unvelcro those two concepts, then we'll be able to talk about our experiences of intimacy and our experiences of sexuality much more accurately. And that's going to be beneficial for everyone, not just asexual people.